Hutchinson crouches under center, takes the snap, pressure, it's hit! Breaks away, but he's hit again! Aiken Adell had him all bottled up. Somebody jumped over the pile and made sure to put him on the ground. Mike Peterson got him. Hutchinson under center, finding the noise, watches as the safety street buck. His play action, under pressure, hit, sack, safety! Darryl Smith, the rookie from Georgia Tech.
Now, from the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field, 1010XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your host, Tony Smith.
Oh, that was pretty funny. That was pretty funny. Tyler, as soon as Afternoon Delight started playing, since we don't do crosstalk after the top of the hour anymore, it's apparently still auto-loaded in there. And as soon as it started playing, I just hear from the other room, Tyler go, "My bad." Like, he yells it at me. And then the timing of that thing was so perfect because it was Will Ferrell as Ron Burgundy singing "My Motto's Always Been," and then that Jaguar roar. That got my morning off to a nice chuckling start. I appreciate that, Tyler.
Good morning.
Good morning. As we get ready for a Friday edition of Jaguars Today, I promise you I'm not completely checked out. Not yet. I'm probably about halfway checked out with vacation getting started for me as soon as the show is done today. We're going to be taking a look around the AFC South. John Harris coming on to talk Houston Texans with us here in about 20 minutes. Jim Wyatt at the bottom of the 10 o'clock hour to talk Tennessee Titans. And then in the 11 o'clock hour, Derek Schultz to talk about the Indianapolis Colts and see, you know, how these other cities feel about where their football team is and what is expected to be a pretty wide open AFC South. We've talked plenty about where we think the Jaguars fit into the AFC South picture, but let's get a sense today of how these other teams feel, which leads into our fan feedback question of the day today, with us taking that tour around the South, asking you simply, we've asked this kind of question in past off seasons, but since we're looking at all three of the other teams in the division today, we'll ask you again, if you could pick one player from each of the other AFC South teams, who would you pick and why? And I think the decisions really come down to, you know, which quarterback do you want? And you may weigh that against, well, what other options do you have on the rosters with whichever quarterback you want? Meaning, do you want to go get Andrew Luck from Indianapolis, or would you rather have Marcus Mariota for the future? So we're asking you that question today. You can give us your feedback on Twitter at 1010XL Fat Tony, at 1010XL Tyler, as well as on the Jaguars Today Facebook page. We'll get to some of your responses on social media a little bit later on. Again, John Harris coming up here in about 20 minutes. You know, Tyler, I don't know how most people plan vacations. You know, like, I don't know how most people do it. If it's like, we know we're going to go on vacation once a year, so, you know, usually we just go to Disney or we go to a different, you know, park somewhere in the country to go see Yellowstone and blah, blah, blah. Like,
right,
that kind of thing. I assume that's what most people do, you know, when they're going to plan their vacations. For me, generally speaking, and I think it drives my friends crazy that I'm this way, but it's the way I am. My vacations are generally planned around what sporting events I can see and what part of the country and when. Like a couple years ago, I went up to D.C. for a week. The reason I was going to D.C. for 5 days was because Team USA was playing a soccer game.
Right, built it around it.
In Baltimore, and I saw the date of the game in Baltimore and decided I will build a vacation around my opportunity to go see Team USA soccer. That's usually how things work with me. This vacation that I'm going on next week is a little bit different. Did you ever see the Coachella videos of this? I mean, I'm taking you deep inside Fat Tony's head here.
Okay.
People who think I'm already too obsessed with movies, this is not going to change your opinion of me in that direction, what I'm about to tell you. Coachella released three videos of Hans Zimmer, who is a composer for movie soundtracks, that's been working with Christopher Nolan. He's been working in Hollywood for forever, right? But they released a video of Hans Zimmer playing a live concert with a full orchestral band. Like, it was him just playing music from movies. Like, that's all he was doing. So he was playing, like, Gladiator music and the music from a bunch of the Nolan movies. So we got Inception and The Dark Knight and that kind of thing. Pirates of the Caribbean is Hans Zimmer. But they released three different videos of Hans Zimmer playing a live show. And I was immediately obsessed with these things. Like, it was, I've never seen anything like that live in concert. It was, is it going to be anywhere close enough to me that I can go? Because I know he was going on tour this summer. Well, as it turned out, when I looked it up, the closest Hans Zimmer gets to Jacksonville, Florida, is Atlanta, Georgia.
Not too far.
Not too far.
Just down the road.
And he happens to get there. Hans Zimmer is playing his concert date. It's really his only concert date in the southeastern United States. Happens to be on my birthday. So I was looking at it. I was like, this is meant to be. Like, there's no way I can't find some way to take this off. So instead, for the first time really in my life as an adult planning a vacation, instead of planning it around what sporting events I could see, it was around a concert of a guy who writes music for movies. That is the reason that I'm going to Atlanta, Georgia.
Do you feel older now, Tony Smith?
I don't feel older. Like, you know, it's one of those things, you love what you love, right? You know, and,
yeah, stick with what works.
Yeah, and I'm not going to apologize for loving what I love. It happened to work out, too, where the Braves are in town starting today after they start their post-All-Star break games today with Arizona coming to town tonight. And then the Cubs are in early next week. So it happened to work out where I could go see Hans Zimmer and I get to go see the new stadium up there, SunTrust Park, and see the Braves play the Cubs, who we're going head-to-head with right now for a wild-card spot in the National League. So it all worked out really well, but it was really the first time that I've ever planned a vacation around anything but sports. I just happen to be able to catch sports while I'm there, too, because I was looking at it, you know, trying to figure out some way, because the Gold Cup's going on right now with U.S. soccer, so I was thinking about trying to go catch a game or two of USA soccer again this offseason, but that didn't work out for me. So, again, just taking in a deep dive into Fat Tony's head, there's no fake. And when I talk about movies the way I do, I'm even, like, of everything I'm going to be doing over the next week, by far the thing I'm most excited about is going to see Hans Zimmer. I've been so excited about this for months since I figured out that I could actually make it happen. I cannot wait for Tuesday night. So that's what I'll be doing next week. We got a couple more hours of Jaguars talk before we get to that. We'll be taking a look around the AFC South. As I said, there is Lance Zierlein for NFL.com is doing a series of articles right now as basically primers for the college football season. And he's doing a list of, you know, 10 or 11 guys at each of the position groups to keep an eye on as we get ready for the 2017 college football season. The positions that he's done thus far, from a Jaguars perspective at least, he's done running backs, which the Jags just drafted Leonard Fournette, so who really cares what running backs do in college football this year? Although, interestingly, he did say Saquon Barkley, who's the running back for Penn State. Zierlein finished his little blurb about Barkley by saying he is better than any running back prospect that was drafted this year. So he is saying that he thinks Barkley is a better prospect than Leonard Fournette. And on top of that, he had Darius Geis, who is replacing Leonard Fournette at LSU, ranked as number one to watch at the running back position in college football. So maybe his opinion is that Geis and Barkley are both better pro prospects than Leonard Fournette. We'll see how that all plays out. But since the Jags drafted Fournette, it's not like they're going to go draft Darius Geis or Saquon Barkley this year in the NFL draft and in the next one that's coming up. But he's done running backs. He's done wide receivers, which the Jags may have interest in a wide receiver, but it's so difficult to project those guys right now, so there's really no point in getting to it. He's also done quarterback, and he's done tight end, but tight end is tight end. He's also done quarterback, which I think it is interesting to take a look at how, you know, he ranks these quarterbacks, who he's taking a look at as we get ready for the college football season, just to have your eye on certain guys as we get ready for college football to kick off here in... When do they kick off? Is it like a month and a half? Something like that? Is it that close? It'll be that fourth week of preseason, so probably, what, 8 weeks away, something like that, from college football really getting started. But he's got his ranking, Lance Zierlein does, on NFL.com, of the top 11 quarterbacks to watch in college football this season. It's not necessarily a scouting ranking, as far as this is where I project them to be ranked getting ready for the NFL. It's more just these are the guys you should keep your eye on this year in college football. Number one, to no one's surprise, Sam Darnold coming out of USC. I know Jets fans are probably all sweating it that the little blurb came out that he may be considering going back to school for another year, which to me would directly indicate that if the Jets have the number one overall pick, Sam Darnold just doesn't want to be a Jet. Like,
aren't the Jets going to be so bad for even the next 2 years that even if they pick number one this year, there's a chance they could even pick number one again next year and still get Sam Darnold, right?
I suppose there's a chance an NFL team tanking for 2 years to get a quarterback that doesn't want to play there. I mean, that's a lot.
I don't even know if they would have to tank. The roster's not very good. They don't have any skill position players. Matt Forte's old. The defense is getting older. Those higher-priced contracts are going to come up. I mean, unless they sign some big guys in free agency, they're going to be bad for quite a while.
Oh, they're terrible. And we all know the idea of them being terrible is so that they can go get a quarterback. And it appears that that would be Sam Darnold. And I still think, look, I think you're taking a big risk. And you've seen Sam Darnold play for basically three quarters of a college football season. Like, that's what you've gotten out of him. And I'm not saying that it wasn't an impressive three quarters of a college football season, but we've seen guys flash for that short a period of time before. I expect Sam Darnold to be a good player again this year, but you are taking a bit of a gamble if that's the direction you want to go if you're the Jets. Number two is a guy that, if you haven't watched Josh Allen of Wyoming play football yet, and you are more of an NFL fan than you are a college fan, which I imagine there are a lot of people who are listening to a show like this that probably are, take some time this year at some point in the college football season and try to find a Wyoming game just so you can watch him, because he is a very impressive guy. Could have come out this year in the NFL draft, chose not to. I'm not sure that I agree with that decision when everything is said and done, but Josh Allen there at Wyoming going back to school, he's number two on that list. Josh Rosen, again, no surprises yet on this. From UCLA coming in at number three on that list. Rosen is a guy that I'm not sure he's shown up big enough in big games yet, and we'll see if he can do a little bit better job of that going into this season. The hype last year around UCLA going to Texas A&M to open up the season, and Rosen really wasn't very good in that football game, and I didn't get to see a whole lot of UCLA football outside of that, so you know, what he did in the rest of the season. I didn't watch any of his other games as intently as I did that opener last year against Texas A&M, so maybe some of my criticism is unfounded with that, but I saw what I saw out of him. Lamar Jackson at number four, that's the Heisman Trophy winner, and if you win the Heisman Trophy and you're a guy that's returning to your school, you certainly deserve some kind of consideration, maybe even to be higher on this list for Lance Zierlein, but Lamar Jackson at four. Mason Rudolph at five, that's a guy that we've heard a little bit of buzz about, Tyler, as far as, you know, the potential for that to be the type of guy that the Jaguars would have to target in the draft when everything is said and done, given that if you assume the top three guys are going to be the top three guys in this draft, and they're all going to be guys that are going to be worthy of being top 10 picks, and you assume that the Jags get into that 6-7-8 win range, and you're talking about picking in the middle of the first round, then there is the significant possibility that Mason Rudolph may be the best quarterback available to the Jags.
Yeah, any mock draft that I've seen so far this offseason for next year, I don't think I've seen the Jags pick higher than sixth. And surprisingly, we mentioned Saquon Barkley earlier in the segment here. Bleacher Report, the day after the Jags selected Leonard Fournette, they had Penn State running back Saquon Barkley going to the Jaguars next year at number six. There's no chance that happens, because if they pick number six, they're going quarterback. I don't see them going anywhere else. If they pick that high next year, I see they have to go quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, look, if they're picking that high, it's because they were terrible, and you would assume that means that the quarterback answer on Blake Bortles has been decided for good. One would hope, and yeah, likely that would mean that they're going quarterback, but I think it is somewhat likely that this team finds a way to win 6-7 games this year. I think that's right around the range where they're going to wind up.
The defense should win you games in itself, a couple games alone.
Yeah.
You know,
and we talked about it with John Osher yesterday. I think the running game's going to be improved enough that it's going to be able to carry him through a couple of games. I think the defense is improved enough that it's going to be able to carry him through a couple of games. Obviously, look, if you want to be a team that's going to win 8, 9, 10 games, then your quarterback has to be significantly better than what you've seen him be thus far in his career. But I think the pieces around him are good enough for this team to still win 6 games this year, probably find themselves maybe in that, you know, 10 to 12 range somewhere in the draft next year. Let's hope, man. I'm tired of talking about them as a top 5 picking team. But Mason Rudolph out of Oklahoma State, playing there in the Big 12, so you know he'll put up the pinball numbers this year. Jared Stidham, a guy that everyone's talking about, the transfer out of Baylor to Auburn, at number 6 on his list. Luke Falk out of Washington State, another one of those guys that could have come out in the draft this year, decided to go back to school. The way that Washington State plays that offense, I mean, he could throw for 6,000 yards this year as much as they throw the football around up there at Washington State. DeAndre Francois out of Florida State at number 8. Mike White out of Western Kentucky. I can be honest with you, I don't know much about him. I know he's got a big arm. Baker Mayfield out of Oklahoma. I'm not sure how much of a pro prospect Baker Mayfield really is. Not sure if his arm is strong enough to do that, but certainly a guy to watch in college football. And Clayton Thorson being thrown in there from Northwestern as his number 11 guy. But you look at those top five guys generally, because that's kind of the area we think the Jags may wind up if they're going to be selecting a quarterback. And I think it's likely that they wind up in a spot where Mason Rudolph is the best available to them by the time we get to the draft next year. But just keep an eye on those guys if you're looking for who to watch as we get into the college football season here just a few months away. And it's been obviously a talking point with SEC and now ACC Media Days getting rolling as college football feels like it's right around the corner. Right around the corner for us today, we begin to take our look around the AFC South. We'll start with the Houston Texans. John Harris going to join us next as we get things really kicked off on a Friday edition of Jaguars Today right here on 1010XL.
It's always great when we can tell you about a product that we really believe in around here. And for me, one of those products and services is Tire Outlet and TireOutlet.com. Recently had a flat, and everything I tell you was absolutely true. Couldn't have been easier to go to the website, get the app, and find the tires I want at the retail location that's most convenient for me. They've got them all over town here. 300,000-plus tires in the local inventory. They've got what you need, probably in stock right this very second. Tire Outlet, wholesale pricing, premium service. That's TireOutlet.com.
This is Jaguars Today from the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute Studios at Everbank Field.
With the 12th pick in the 2017 NFL Draft, the Houston Texans select Deshaun Watson.
There it is. The Houston Texans taking their shot at trying to find the answer at franchise quarterback for the second consecutive offseason. We saw how it worked out from a Brock Osweiler point of view as far as finding the franchise. We'll see if Deshaun Watson works out better than that. It was still good enough to win the AFC South last year, though, even despite Brock Osweiler struggling the way he did. And obviously they found a way to trade him this offseason to the Cleveland Browns. So right now we start our tour around the AFC South with the Houston Texans as we welcome in John Harris, the sideline reporter for the Texans. You can find him on Twitter at @JHarrisFootball. How are you today, John?
I'm well, Tony. I'm just navigating Houston traffic, which can be a nightmare. But other than that, doing well and looking forward to going to Greenbrier here in a couple weeks.
Yeah, just a couple weeks. I know for the Jaguars, it's 2 weeks from yesterday that training camp gets started. I think the big question, obviously, with the Texans is making the move to go get Deshaun Watson. What have you seen or heard about Deshaun Watson through the offseason that he's had that indicates whether or not he's going to be playing and how early in the 2017 season he might be?
Tony, the first time that we got a chance to see him, realistically see him, was the first week of veteran or I guess OTA, full team OTA. And I watched the first couple series, and I turned to a friend of mine who works for the Texans, and I said, DP, I don't see this. This isn't happening this year. And week by week by week, he got better and better, Deshaun did. And I remember by the end of mandatory minicamp, I turned to Mark Vandermeer, the voice of the Texans, and I said, I really wouldn't be surprised if this happens at some point in 2017. Because I think we've all in Houston have said, okay, look, Tom Savage is quarterback. And look, that's the message from everybody up top on down. Tom Savage is starting quarterback. Tom's the guy. Go with Tom. We drafted Deshaun. He's our future, but Tom's our guy right now. I just have this feeling at some point watching Deshaun, hearing what Bill O'Brien has had to say about Deshaun, that it's going to happen maybe a lot sooner than anybody expects, regardless of Tom's health or otherwise. And that has obviously been a big deal here in Houston for Tom. His Savage has not been able to stay healthy. And then when he finally got a shot last year, he gets a couple starts, and he goes out on a concussion because of the quarterback sneak. So the one thing about Deshaun that I think I've been able to see and a lot of people have been able to see is his work ethic is off the chart. And Bill O'Brien has talked about it. But a great story for me was Memorial Day weekend, and the team was off on Friday. They were off on Monday. So you got a bunch of millionaires with a four-day weekend. They're gone. There's some that flew to Cabo. They were off taking a vacation, whatever the case might be. They were done. They had three hard days of OTAs. They were out. So I was down doing work, and there's nobody in the building. I mean, even people in business ops where I am, There's nobody in the building. And so I'm down in our radio studio, which is across from the locker room, right next to the weight room. There's no music. It's just dead. I walk out of the studio, and I can see a guy coming out of the weight room. And I can tell he's a player. I'm like, what's a player doing here on a Friday, a Memorial Day weekend? He takes the towel off his face, and I realize it's Deshaun. And I said, Deshaun, you realize it's Memorial Day weekend, right? And he goes, yeah, I know. And I said, Deshaun, you're the only one here. And he goes, oh, there's some guys in the weight room. I walked by Tony. There was nobody in the weight room. He was the only guy there in the weight room as a rookie. Rookie with millions of dollars for the first time in his life. And he's getting a workout in the middle of the day on a four-day weekend. That's the kind of work ethic that I guarantee the quarterback from last year's team did not have. And I think the players respect it. And I think there's this thought that we can win behind that guy at some point. The problem is they feel like they can do that behind Tom Savage too. They believe in him. They like him. They respect him. His quarterback room is totally different, a complete 180 from last year. I think that's going to be a good thing for this team at some point.
When you start to take a look ahead to the preseason, thinking about the quarterback position and the week one matchup with the Jags coming in against the Texans, as far as the quarterback decision goes, do you think it'll be for Tom Savage? Does he just need to hold on to the job? Does he need to earn the job when we get to preseason? Can Deshaun Watson, in those four preseason games, win the starting job week one?
I think he could. I think it's a long shot, but I think he could. Bill O'Brien has preached from the day he got here. There's competition at every spot. I mean, that's something he has preached, Tony, since he set foot in this building. There's competition everywhere. Well, most of the time, you don't want competition in the quarterback spot, but he's preached it, and it's happened. Whether it's Hoyer and Mallett, or Fitzpatrick and Mallett, or Osweiler versus Osweiler, there's been competition all the way through. And I think he wants to keep that up. Now, he wants to also make sure that people keep expectations for Deshaun in check. This is still a rookie quarterback. It's a little different than Dak Prescott. Dak has talked about it before. When Dak got to Dallas, a lot of the things he did at Mississippi State carried over. Even the verbiage to what he's doing in Dallas. Deshaun, as he said, is learning Spanish. And he's learned it pretty well thus far. But it's a completely different situation once you put it all together and you go out there on the field in preseason games, etc. I think if Deshaun is going to win the job, he's got to get some time with the one. And I could see that happening. I could see Bill O'Brien messing around with that and making that happen early on. Because he did it in OTA. There would be times where he'd put the number one wide receivers out with him, or he'd put the number one offensive line with Deshaun. I think he's going to play around that preseason and see how it looks at various points. I just think at the end of the day, Tom's going to end up being that guy to start. It's just a matter of how long does he end up holding on to that job. We've said all along, best case scenario for the 2017 season is for Tom Savage to be the quarterback and Deshaun never to see the field, because that means that Savage has had he's crushed the year. I just don't know if he's going to do that. And plus, Tom's got an injury history. He has been healthy 1 year since he's been here. And at this point, it's a lot to ask to maybe get him through 16 games. So I do think there's a possibility Deshaun could do it. But I think Tom's going to hang on to it for at least a little while.
John Harris, Texans sideline reporter, joining us. Speaking of injury history, the last couple of years, J.J. Watt has had to deal with a couple of different injuries. I think I have a little question about, are we going to see the same J.J. Watt coming back that we saw before, which is a guy who was basically a shoe-in for Defensive Player of the Year in the NFL? He was an MVP candidate when he was healthy. Do you think that you're going to get that same level of play out of J.J. Watt now that we've had back-to-back seasons where he's dealing with these core injuries?
Well, yes, J.J., he says absolutely. He says, I'm back. And he was back for OTA. And the only reason they took him out of OTAs is because he was jumping on batting passes down, which I'm sure surprises everybody in Jacksonville. J.J. Watt batting down practices with no pads on. It's J.J. We love him, but he's going to make things as difficult as possible on everybody in OTAs. That said, he looks like the old J.J. He moved around like the old J.J. So that's what we're hoping that we end up getting. Now, again, with a back, you never know. And so you kind of keep your fingers crossed. But the good thing was without Watt last year, Clowney stepped up in a major way. Whitney Mercilus stepped up in a major way. E.J. Reader as a rookie stepped up in a major way. But Arthur McKinney had a tremendous year, second team AP All-Pro. So you had that front seven stepping up and taking on some of that responsibility. So if Watt is healthy, all of a sudden you got the scariest front seven in the NFL. But, again, with a back injury, we've seen Gronk. He'd be fine 1 year, and then the next year, he's out for the whole year. So the hope is that J.J. has done the rehab, has done it properly, and has not taxed it too much so that he's able to play a full 16 games, hopefully, plus in 2017. So we do think, and he thinks, that he's going to be fine. And we feel like he's going to be fine. But he felt like that starting the 2017 season, and then it all went south in that game against New England. So hopefully he's right. Because if he is, this is one scary defense to have to face.
Jaguars fans love the fact that I get to ask this next question. How do the Houston Texans replace cornerback A.J. Boye?
Yeah. Oh, wonderful. Of all the guys I wanted, I'll tell you this. Our game against the New England Patriots, that last playoff game, A.J. had a tremendous game. Tremendous game. He was our player of the game. And so I got a chance to interview him in the locker room afterwards. And I just kind of said, you're staying, right? Kind of joking with him. And he kind of smiled at me and said, yeah, man, I'm staying. And I know he was, a heat of the moment sort of thing. He kind of smiled at me. But I knew there was a possibility that there was going to be a team that was going to be able to throw a lot of money at him. I just was hoping it wasn't Jacksonville, because I already think Jalen Ramsey's the best corner in the league. All this talk about, Richard Sherman this and keep to lead that. No. Look, I'll say it. Jalen Ramsey's the best corner in the game. He's the best one I saw last year. He's the best one I've seen the last 3 years. He's the only guy that I've seen get up in DeAndre Hopkins' face and do the things he's done to DeAndre and really frustrate DeAndre the way that he did. And now you put A.J. on the other side. Look, A.J.'s going to get tested. There's no doubt. So what does that mean for us? Well, it means that Kevin Johnson, a former first-round pick, who I think may not have completely pushed A.J. Boye to the bench, but Kevin got hurt in the Indianapolis Colts game. And that was after slowing down T.Y. Hilton. I mean, slowed the ghost down to really nothing. But after the game, sitting outside the training room with tears in his eyes, and you're like, well, what's wrong? Next day you find out he broke his foot again. So if Kevin comes back healthy, this sounds weird, but Kevin may be more important health-wise than J.J. is. We saw what we could do without J.J. up front. Without Kevin and A.J., well, that would be a struggle. But at least Kevin is there, a long, physical, tough, smart corner. He steps into A.J.'s role. You still got Jonathan Joseph. You got Kareem Jackson, who Blake Bortles knows very, very well. And I think that's a pretty good threesome at corner. And then you throw in Tristan Decoux, they drafted in the fifth round. Well, I think he's got some potential to play down the road. So I think they're going to be okay at corner. But health now becomes a major factor. Last year, there was a lot of depth there because A.J. was there to be the third corner. They felt pretty good about the depth they had. But then Kevin went down. It was A.J.'s got to step up. Then Jonathan Joseph got hurt a little bit. And then, boy, he became the number one corner before too long. So I think Kevin Johnson steps into that role. And I think the transition's relatively seamless, but health becomes a factor, because if one of those guys goes down, now they only got two guys, and that really stretches them thin.
John, we saw some static between the team and left tackle Dwayne Brown earlier in this offseason. What can you tell us about that? Is Dwayne Brown planning to, report for training camp? How serious is his holdout trying to get himself a new contract?
Well, the one thing Bill O'Brien always says is that OTAs are voluntary. Now, mini camp, mandatory, but they went a day and a half, like a lot of teams. They don't take all those 3 days because it's a long offseason. So he was not there. Bill didn't seem very upset about it, didn't freak out about it. There was no real panic. Dwayne's been in Houston off and on at certain points. He was at J.J. Watt's softball game. He's going to be at a roast of a former offensive lineman here for the Texans, Wade Smith, the Sunday before we go to the Greenbrier. So there's a thought that, okay, this thing will get worked out, whatever the issue is. And look, Dwayne's seen some tackles that aren't even near his class get a lot of money. And Dwayne knows, I'm in my 30s now. I've been in this league since 2008. I think it's his 10th season. I don't have much time left. I got to maximize it. And you talk about leverage, this team's offensive line was not great last year, but there was one foundation piece who played extremely well all year long, and that was coming off a gruesome injury against the Jags in 2015. That was Dwayne Brown. So Dwayne knows this team without me at left tackle is in a lot of trouble. So he's got some leverage, if you will. But I think cooler heads, intelligent people will sit down and work this out, and he'll be ready to go. I don't think there's a lot of panic at this point. But if we go to the Greenbrier, 76 is not on the plane with us, I do think there could be some angst once that gets publicly known to the people of Houston, him not being there at training camp. I think it works itself out. I'm trying to be the eternal optimist about this. But he did miss mandatory minicamp. He gave up $80,000. Now, when you hear, wow, you have $80,000, holy smokes, I would never do that. Well, he makes millions. And he might be giving up $80,000 to end up making a few more million, which I don't blame him for. I hope he comes back. He's a great leader for this team, and he's the best lineman that we have. And he might be the best offensive lineman in the AFC South at that point. And you can say what you want about the Titans, guys. I think there are a couple of them are overrated. But to me, Dwayne is that guy. Now he's just got to come back, and I think that he will. But if he doesn't that first day, there's going to be a lot of angst and anxiety as to when that does happen.
All right, John Harris, Texan sideline reporter at J Harris Football on Twitter. Kind enough to join us for a few minutes today to talk about the Houston Texans. We'll talk to you again week one, if not before, John.
Absolutely, Tony. Appreciate it, man. Have a great day and a great weekend.
All right, there's John Harris. Coming up next, Jim Wyatt, as we turn our attention to, look, I know Jaguars fans don't have any love for any of the teams in the division, but certainly the big bullseye from a fan perspective is and has been on the Tennessee Titans for a long time. They seem to be an emerging team. We'll see what Jim Wyatt has to say about that as we continue along on a Friday edition of Jaguars Today on 1010XL.
Hey, do the Titans even have a mascot? A raccoon is their mascot.
Good for them.
Here come the Titans now from their own 25. Jags 31, Titans 17. Matt Castle drops the throw. Throws the left of that ball. Is intercepted. Jalen Ramsey, 15, 10, 5. Touchdown. A pick six for Jalen Ramsey. And the Jags are pouring it on the Tennessee Titans.
Oh, it was a bad week 16 for the Tennessee Titans. They come into Jacksonville. The fate of the AFC South in their own hands. All they have to do is find some way to beat Jacksonville and Houston, and they're going to the playoffs and going to be hosting a playoff game as the AFC South champions. And instead, it played out the way it did here in Jacksonville. You heard the Jalen Ramsey pick six right there off of Matt Castle. Marcus Mariota had left that game with an injury before that occurred, as we welcome in Jim Wyatt, who covers the Tennessee Titans for Titans Online. Been a longtime friend of Mike and I here on the airwaves in Jacksonville, Florida. What's going on today, Jim?
Not too much. How you doing? It was a bad day for the Titans. I know that. I remember that day well, December 24th and the flight back. So it's a painful memory for people in Tennessee.
Yeah, no doubt. And the past couple months, I'm sure the hype has been building back up for the 2017 season. As I mentioned, Marcus Mariota injured in that game. What is the latest you can tell us about Marcus as he's recovering from that injury?
Well, he's on track to be ready for camp. And I think, you know, everybody inside the building, coaches, teammates, front office, I think they were all pleasantly surprised with how much he did this offseason. They were going to be careful with him as he worked his way back from that injury. If you remember, he suffered that injury, and then about a couple hours later, Derek Carr suffers a similar injury in Oakland's final game. And I think a lot of people looked at Carr and saw him come back early and want to know why it was taking Mariota a little bit longer. And his injury was more severe and more had to be more careful with him in his recovery. He did all 10 OTAs. He did the mini camp. Still hasn't really turned it loose from what we saw in off-season workouts. And he had people obviously around his ankles and hasn't been in padded practices. That's the next step. But they expect him, in Mike Mularkey's words, to be off the injury report, start a camp, and be ready to go.
Last offseason for the Titans, it felt like it was about trying to get that run game going. Mularkey trying to, establish that identity. They draft Jack Conklin in the first round to play him at right tackle. They trade for DeMarco Murray, obviously. They draft Derrick Henry, and it paid dividends for him. This offseason seems to have been about trying to give Marcus Mariota weapons. What are the early reviews on Corey Davis, their first-round draft pick?
Well, he was a little slow this offseason earlier. as well, just because he was dealing with an ankle injury. But at the end, when they kind of turned him loose and took the handcuffs off, I mean, you can see what this guy is all about. I mean, watch him on tape and see him make plays, but me seeing him in person and seeing him snatch balls out of the air and kind of cutting and going, seeing how big he is, I mean, he's going to be a big part of this offense early. Like I mentioned, Taywan Taylor, a third-round pick out of Western Kentucky, who's really solid from beginning to end this offseason. So both their draft picks look good this offseason. They go sign Eric Decker right at the end of minicamp. Three new weapons there. Then you throw in Jonnu Smith, you know, tied in from Florida International, who should help in the passing game as well. They do have more weapons for Mariota, and that should make him an offense better.
Do you think they open it up a little bit more than they did last year as far as throwing the ball around?
I think it could be a week-to-week deal, and depending on matchup and how teams defend them, I think they're capable. I do think that Mike Mularkey's mindset still is going to be to pound it, and they've got the offensive line to do it, and they've got the running backs in Murray and Henry to do it. I think they can potentially spread teams out and gash them that way. But if teams are defending them a certain way or they think a matchup's better to throw it, you know, this team can now go, you know, four wide in a lot of situations, you know. And with the guys I mentioned, I haven't mentioned Tajay Sharpe, who's coming off of an injury himself, but and had a pretty good rookie year. But, you know, you're talking about Corey Davis and Rashard Matthews, and Taywan Taylor, and you know, certainly, and Decker. I mean, I think this team is. I think I mentioned Taywan Taylor there. They've got guys capable of being productive in a lot of different spots, lining up at receiver.
Jim Wyatt, who covers the Tennessee Titans for Titans Online. You can follow him on Twitter at JWyattSports. That's with two T's. If you want to give him the follow, check out the latest with the Tennessee Titans. We mentioned the running backfield with DeMarco Murray, who they traded for last year, drafted Derrick Henry. Do you expect the workload between those two guys to be about the same in 2017, or does Derrick Henry push a little bit more into the carries that Murray was getting?
Well, Mike Mularkey has consistently said that DeMarco Murray will continue to be the workhorse, and he said it throughout last year, and when I was around him at the owners' meetings or around him when he was asked that question at the combine or at OTAs, he was consistent in his answer. And DeMarco Murray's a tough guy to take off the field. He was third in the league in rushing last year. He's good on third down, catching the football. He's good in pass protection. So, you know, all signs, at least everything that's been said, point to it being the same, and that Murray getting a lot of work and Henry helping him. With that said, I mean, Derrick Henry's looked great this offseason. I mean, he looks faster. He looks like he's in better shape. He knows what to do more in his second year in the NFL. He's hungry. He wants to be out there more. And I just have a feeling that when he gets opportunities, he's going to be better, and he's going to maybe force them to play him a little bit more. So I'm curious to see how that one plays out, because they've got two really good running backs. You know, Murray's not going to let his guard down, and he's not going to ease up to open the door for Henry. But I think Henry's capable of kind of showing he can maybe kick the door down.
On the other side of the ball, Jim, the defensively for the Titans, how do they feel inside the building overall about what they've built on that side of the ball?
Well, I think they feel like they've gotten better, and they've got potentially four new starters. One of them, Jonathan Cyprian, the Jaguars fans are very familiar with. You know, he's new, and I think he's had a good offseason. Logan Ryan, the cornerback from the Patriots, who's won a couple Super Bowl rings, is going to be a starting corner. And I think Adoree Jackson, you know, for another first-round pick out of USC, has a chance to earn a starting role as well. That's three guys in the secondary that are new. And you throw in Sylvester Williams, a big nose tackle who's played the last 4 years in Denver. Those guys could all be starters. That's a heck of a big chunk of your defense that's new. Those guys got to get to speed. But you pair those guys with a couple of returning Pro Bowlers and Brian Arakpo and Jarrell Casey and some other good talent on this team, whether it's Derek Morgan or Avery Williamson. know, they've got some players, that are capable of really taking a big step in 2017. They've got to do that. I think the offense is going to do that. I think the offense is going to be better, no doubt. They need the defense to hold its own, and that's going to require guys, being good from the get-go.
You know, you mentioned the secondary there, and three out of the four guys potentially starting for them in that core are first-year players, at least in Houston. One of them could be a rookie, and Adoree Jackson out of USC, the other first-round pick that the Titans had. How has that unit gelled together throughout this offseason? What has that conversation sounded like?
I think it's been good. I mean, they've got some other guys contending for some of those spots. LeSean Sims finished the year, playing a lot, and he's not going to go quietly, and I think he's going to be a factor back there as well. And they've got to figure out, and Bryce McCain, who's played a lot of nickel, playing in the slot, I think he's going to be in the mix. So there could be a lot of mixing and matching. They've played a lot of safeties around here too, so not just those starting four are going to have some chemistry and play well together. And I think they've kind of took some strides this offseason, but, some of the other guys are going to be mixed in as well. I mean, I think Kevin Byard, who's a second-year guy at MTSU, I think he's going to be a guy that takes a big, big step this year at the safety position opposite Cyprian. And then a veteran, Norris Searcy, is going to be on the field some as well, because they do like to rotate the safety. So it's going to take a lot of guys and a lot of new faces getting on the same page and playing together and trying to avoid, communication issues and getting on the, getting on the same mindset and same page moving forward.
Jim Wyatt joining us from Titans Online at J Wyatt Sports on Twitter. Last year, the Titans had the first pick of the second round. A lot of Jaguars fans sitting around on that Friday night hoping that Miles Jack was going to fall to him. The Titans selected Kevin Dodd with that first pick of the second round. He didn't get the opportunity to play a bunch last year. What did you see out of Dodd during his rookie season, and what are the expectations for him going into year two?
Well, I didn't see much from him his rookie years because he wasn't healthy and available. I mean, he had an unfortunate start to his NFL career, and that he was an early pick. I still remember him walking the red carpet in Philadelphia at the draft, like all those early picks, the projected early picks do. And he didn't go in the first round, but he did go to the top of the second round, as you said. And he came in here, they had high expectations for him. He had a foot injury during the off season that he had a procedure on. He came back, was not really quite himself mentally or physically. They decided to let him have a second procedure to try to repair it. He ended up going on injured reserve at the end of last season, and he spent this off season kind of getting himself right again. He didn't do anything in the OTAs and mini camp. It kind of put the start of training camp as his return date. They still have high expectations for him. I talked to Dick LeBeau about him at the end of June. I talked to Brian Arakpo, who has a locker right down the stall right down the locker room from him. And everybody has big envisions big things for him, and he does for himself too. And if he's able to do that, I mean, you're talking about another really talented rusher joining a good tandem in Arakpo and Morgan. But he's got to prove and do it because he has had to deal with that injury. He just hasn't been able to advance like he's wanted to. So in a lot of ways, he's starting off as a rookie. I mean, he has some experience he can build upon. Being around the guys and the playing time he did get is going to help him, but he just hasn't played a lot, and the team hopes that he can really take a big, big step this year and help him.
Jim, I'm guessing that last year Titans fans didn't expect to have the AFC South potentially in their hands going into Week 16. And going into 2017, is the expectation for the Tennessee Titans to win the AFC South, or the season just was a failure for them?
I think that's kind of the way you got to look at things. I mean, I think they're not alone in that thinking either in the division, because I think the whole division's getting better. I mean, the Titans took a huge step going from 3 wins to 9 wins, and yeah, they did have it there for the taking and let it slip away, on Christmas Eve down in Jacksonville. But what they were able to do last year is they learned how to win close games and learn how to win against good teams. And the personnel's better, the roster's better, the mindset's different. So, yeah, I think now you don't want to take a step back. They won 9 games last year, the Titans, and the team doesn't want to slip back and finish short of that. And, you know, the Texans should be good again with the defense. And I'm curious to see what happens to the quarterback position there. But the Colts have been a nemesis, for years with Andrew Luck. And I think they've made some good moves this offseason in Jacksonville. Yeah, they've just made too many good moves there, both in the draft and in free agency, to upgrade that roster, that I think they're going to be an improved team. And they've been a thorn in the side of the Titans as well over the years. So I think everyone in the division is getting better, and the Titans know that. And they've been a trendy pick. I mean, I've noticed Peter King picking them number 4 in his power rankings. I think Pro Football Focus had them as like the 3rd best roster in the league. I mean, now you've got to deal with a different set of expectations. But I do think the team's built to handle it, because they've got some good veterans and the guys leading the way in Malarkey and Robinson, the GM. But you got to do it, and that's part of getting better and being consistently good, is you've got to do it when people know and have high expectations for you. And they've got to find a way to get off to a good start, a tough game against Oakland right out of the gate. You know, got to go back down to Jacksonville early. You know, Seattle's on the schedule in September. I mean, so it's another tough start, but with the quarterback who's got to prove in training camp he's ready to roll. But I do think the team is a lot better than it's been in the last couple of years and should be in a position to contend.
All right, Jim, we'll talk to you again, getting ready for that Week 2 matchup when the Titans head down to Jacksonville, if not before that, at some point in the preseason. Appreciate you giving me a few minutes today.
Okay, have a good weekend. Appreciate it.
All right, there he is, Jim Wyatt, Titans Online, at J. Wyatt Sports. If you want to give him the follow on Twitter, coming up, we got this state in football history as well as the Honda drive around the NFL. We'll continue our look around the AFC South at the bottom of the 11 o'clock hour. Derek Schultz will join us to talk about the Indianapolis Colts. We're asking you the fan feedback question of the day today, asking you if you could have one player from each of your divisional rivals. So if you could have one player off the Colts, off the Texans, and off the Titans to add to this Jacksonville roster, who would you take from each of those teams and why? We'll get some of your responses a little bit later on. Next up, this state in football history, the Honda driver on the NFL on a Bob Roberts First Coast Roofing Friday here on Jaguars Today.
Did you ever go to the big box store looking for a razor blade and they're locked behind a case like it's Fort Knox, like they're made out of pure gold? Well, they may price them like they're made out of pure gold, but the best razors on the market aren't the ones you're going to find at the big box store. They're delivered right to your front door. I'm talking about Harry's Razors, and you'll find them by going to harrys.com. The best blades I've ever used, and they're factory shipped direct to you, cutting out the middleman, saving you a bunch of money. In fact, Harry's is so confident you're going to love their blades as much as I do. They're offering you their set for free if you just cover shipping. A free trial set includes an ergonomic razor handle, 5 precision engineered blades with a lubricant strip and a trimmer blade, a rich lathering shave gel, a travel blade cover, and I partner with Harry's to bring you this incredible offer. So head over to harrys.com/Mike to get it now. Get started with Harry's today. Get this free trial offer, including a handle, blade, shave gel, and travel blade cover. You get it at harrys.com/Mike. That's harrys.com/Mike. Don't wait. Get started with Harry's today.
And now, this date in football history.
All right, this date in football history, not a whole lot of newsy things have happened on this date, but I do have a handful of birthdays for you, including a lot of Jacksonville flavor in the birthdays today. But first, happy 32nd birthday to 7-time Pro Bowler, 4-time All-Pro cornerback Darrell Revis. Revis Island isn't in exactly the same shape that it was 3 years ago when he was winning a Super Bowl ring with the Pats before rejoining the New York Jets. Revis is currently a free agent who is still expressing interest in returning to playing football. He may even be willing to move to safety, he said, at the end of what is almost certainly a Hall of Fame career. If it means he can keep collecting paychecks, I'm sure he'll play safety for somebody if they want to pay him to do it, to at least give it a shot. Happy 69th birthday to Jacksonville's own Ken Burrow. Burrow was born and raised in Jacksonville, a graduate of Raines High School before heading to Texas Southern to play college football. Burrow enjoyed a 12-year career, 11 of those with the Houston Oilers, where he made the Pro Bowl in 1975 and 77. He actually led the NFL in receiving in 75 with just over 1,000 yards. He was also the last player to wear double zero on his jersey before they changed the rules about the jersey numbers you could wear in the National Football League. I'm not sure that many people in Jacksonville would like to wish Jerry Porter a happy birthday, so instead, I would just say that it is Jerry Porter's 39th birthday. Porter played the final season of his 9-year career here in Jacksonville in 2008, where he caught 11 passes for 181 yards for a 5-11 Jaguars team that season. Happy 28th birthday to the second-round pick of the Jacksonville Jaguars in 2012. The windmill, Andre Branch, totaled 14 sacks in 4 seasons with the Jags before signing with the Miami Dolphins last year in free agency. The Brancher finished with 5.5 sacks last season for the Fins, and that is this date in football history.
Now the Honda Drive around the NFL, brought to you by your First Coast Honda dealers.
Well, Tony, J.J. Watt has a brand new sneaker hitting stores with Reebok today, and Watt tweeted out a picture of the all-black shoe with a caption, $400 less than some shoes on the market and 100% more effective. Available tonight at midnight for $99.
Big baller zone.
Yeah, a follow-up tweet says, and I actually wear them. So a dig there, of course, at Lonzo Ball for not wearing the Big Baller brand at a couple games at the NBA Summer League.
You are a hater.
Former NFL quarterback Tim Tebow hit a walk-off home run, his 6th home run of his short baseball career so far, Tony. And Tebow ties Celtics GM Danny Ainge with a 6th home run of his minor league career last night, also passing Russell Wilson, who had 5 with the Rangers. John Elway had 4 minor league home runs, while Michael Jordan had 3. And I even heard some people making the argument yesterday, Tony, that Tim Tebow is a better professional baseball player than he ever was a football player. So that debate may be going on for quite a long time. But I mentioned earlier in the week on the Honda Driver on the NFL about Bruce Arians revealing that he had 3 cancer diagnoses, and including one, the latest one coming last December while coaching the Cardinals. And Arians told ESPN on Thursday that his health will dictate whether he's on the sideline again for 2018, but that he has never wavered on coaching the upcoming season despite the medical issues over the past year. And the 29 NFL teams that are staying put will each receive a gross sum of $55 million over a period of up to 11 years from relocation fees associated with the moves of the Rams, Chargers, and the Raiders. The Rams and Chargers each pay $645 million beginning in December 2019 and ending December 2028. The Raiders will pay $378 million over 10 years beginning in the year that they do move to Las Vegas, and that money will be divided among every team but the Raiders. An incredible amount of money going to the other teams who are staying in their respective cities.
Yeah, I mean, that's the way it works in the NFL if you want to relocate. Is that it?
That is it.
All right. I'm going to digress for a moment. I know it's a football show. I'm going to talk baseball for a moment, but believe me, I got a point to make about this. We were, Tyler and I were just talking about this on the break. Pablo Sandoval, the Boston Red Sox, who had an incredible World Series with the Giants 3 years ago, or 4 years ago now, I guess it would be, but he was incredible in that World Series, became one of the hotter free agent prospects in Major League Baseball. The Red Sox, the team that went out and got Pablo Sandoval, signing him to a 5-year, $95 million deal. Pablo has hit something like 14 home runs now in 2.5 seasons. He's spent a lot of time on the bench, can't get himself on the field for the Red Sox. I bring this up because this week, especially, there's been a lot of talk about guaranteed contracts in the NFL and the money that NBA and Major League Baseball players are getting compared to NFL players. Pablo Sandoval and this 5-year, $95 million albatross of a contract with the Boston Red Sox that they're now putting him, they're optioning back down to the minor leagues because he's been that bad. Like, they can't even get him on a roster right now with the Boston Red Sox. This is a circle, this the whole thing moment as far as why the NFL will never go to guaranteed contracts. Never. They won't do it. Because in the National Football League, you have a guy that signs a, assume the numbers are the same, not that they would be at outside of the quarterback position, but assume the numbers are the same. 5 years, $95 million. The way an NFL contract would be set up would be basically the first 2 years would be guaranteed. They're going to have to pay him. They can't get out of it without paying a heavy penalty through the first couple of years of that contract. But that third, fourth year, fifth year would basically be optional for the team. They may have to pay a little bit of it, but they're not going to have wind up paying him 5 years and $95 million unless he earns 5 years and $95 million. That's the way the NFL is set up right now. Now, I'm not saying that there aren't bad contracts in the NFL, that there haven't been bad contracts in the history of the league. I'm not saying that. I'm saying you look at this kind of deal and how rotten it has turned out for the Red Sox. Who can afford it? It's not like they're going to be hurting because Sandoval has cost them all this money. But in the National Football League, halfway through his third year, Pablo Sandoval wouldn't even be on that roster. He would be gone. This past offseason, Pablo Sandoval would have been cut, released outright, and allowed to sign wherever the heck he wanted to, and he may have gotten a little bit of money. Maybe a couple $1 million would have been guaranteed in that third year, but he wouldn't be getting a full 5 years, $95 million. That's the leverage that the owners in the National Football League are never going to give to NFL players because they don't have to. And because we talked about this yesterday again, the idea of trying to convince the guys that are on the bottom half of an NFL roster that it's in their best interest to sit down for a year so that the guys that are going to be getting paid get paid that guaranteed money, what's the incentive for those guys on the bottom half of these rosters to give up their lifestyle, their earning potential, where it may only be 3 or 4 years where they can earn so that the guys at the top can continue to get paid major money? Like, it just doesn't make any sense. And this Sandoval thing is another example of, look, the NFL is not going to budge on guaranteed money. It's just, it's not going to happen. The contracts are all going to be, as we see every offseason right now, you know, a guy will sign a 5-year deal. It's really a 2-year deal. That's the way it works in the NFL. And it's a business model that's been working very well for the National Football League. There's no reason for them to change it. They may make some concessions, you know, the next time that they sit down at the table with a very weak NFL Players Association, they may make some changes to the deal, to the CBA, but nothing drastic is going to happen until the NFL players are willing to strike and really sit out and miss games. And at least any time in the last 25, 30 years, there's been no indication that the players would be willing to do that. We keep going back to a couple years ago. I can remember, you know, Dempsey telling me about talking to Maurice Jones-Drew when the players weren't reporting for an offseason. And Mojo basically saying, oh, no, we're not going to miss any game checks. Well, if you're not going to miss game checks, you know what? You're not going to win when it comes to negotiation because you hold no leverage except that is your playing ability. That's it. That's the leverage you have as a player in the National Football League. And if you're not willing to risk that to get something, and the idea of convincing everyone to do that is just ludicrous when it comes to the NFL. But Pablo Sandoval, another example of why the NFL will never sit down and negotiate that necessarily with the players in the National Football League. We got our continue our look around the AFC South. We've already talked to John Harris in Houston, the Texans sideline reporter. We've talked to Jim Wyatt with the Tennessee Titans online. And now we turn our attention to the Indianapolis Colts. The health or lack of health for Andrew Luck. When will he be able to start throwing a football? We'll talk to Derek Schultz about that as we take a look at the division rival Indianapolis Colts. The fan feedback question of the day today asking, as we take a look around the division, if you could have one player off of each of the other teams in the South, so one player off the Texans, one player off the Colts, one player off the Titans, which player would you select to come to Jacksonville and why? We'll get to your answers here in about 30 minutes here on the program. But Derek Schultz to talk Indianapolis Colts football coming up next here on a Bob Roberts First Coast Roofing Friday on 1010XL.
From the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field, more Jaguars today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Two right, one left. Hand off to the right side of Corey Grant. There's some room for Corey. Into Colts territory to 45, to the 40, into the open field to the 30, 20, 10, 5. Touchdown! Corey Grant has gone the distance and extended the lead for the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Oh, that vaunted Colts defense couldn't contain Corey Grant last year up in Indianapolis. As we have taken a look at two of the three AFC South opponents for the Jaguars, John Harris and Jim Wyatt for the Texans and Titans, respectively. Now we say hello to Derek Schultz, who covers the Indianapolis Colts with Fox Sports 97.5 and Indy at Schultz 975 on Twitter. What's going on today, Derek?
Hey, man, thanks for playing well with me. I'm not a native Hoosier, but you know the way to Indiana people's hearts when you start me off with something like that.
Yeah, no doubt about it. As obviously the big question for the Colts coming into the season is the health of Andrew Luck. Hasn't been able to really get into it at all this offseason. What's the latest you're hearing about Luck and his timetable to return?
Well, the latest we're hearing is the same that everyone else is hearing, which is nothing. And you can spin that into a positive and take the Colts for their word, and that Andrew Luck is progressing nicely and everything is working well within their timetable, and he's going to be throwing real soon, and his season is in jeopardy. You can take the pessimistic viewpoint, which is things are going really poorly. He's behind schedule. He still hasn't thrown yet. Hey, what's the deal with the shoulder? Is this more serious than the Colts are letting on? So you almost have kind of a split of the Colts camp, in that some fans are thinking to themselves, hey, all is well, everything's going to be okay. And then other fans think that the sky is falling right now. So it's hard to really get a gauge on where Andrew Luck is, because the Colts are controlling the flow of information right now, and they're really just not tipping their hand very much.
Derek, we're having a little bit of a connection issue. I don't know if you have us on speaker or something, but we're having a little bit of trouble hearing you. I do want to ask, you know, Frank Gore, who's obviously getting a little bit long in the tooth, they draft Marlon Mack in that backfield with the Indianapolis Colts this year as well. What is the plan for those guys in the backfield? Are they drafting Mack with the idea of limiting some of the touches for Frank Gore and getting him off the field, especially on third down?
I don't think necessarily that they drafted Mack as far as a plan specifically for 2017. Frank Gore's in the final year of his contract. More likely than not, this is probably his final year in the NFL, period. He's still an effective player. He ran for over 1,000 yards last year. And you guys know that the Colts have had an issue with their offensive line for years and years. So anytime you can rush for 1,000 yards behind this line, you're doing pretty well. They brought back Robert Turbin, who's been a veteran backup in the league. He spent a lot of time in Seattle. He was with the Colts last year. I'm assuming that he's going to start the season as their number two on the depth chart. So they really like Marlon Mack. They think that he has game-breaking speed. And I think they have plans for him in the future to potentially be that number one guy moving forward. But as far as in the scope of 2017, I would expect Mack to be maybe more of a contributor on special teams, maybe in certain third down situations they would use him. But ultimately, I don't think that that's really going to affect Frank Gore's bottom line very much. I really feel like the Colts feel confident that Gore and Turbin, at least in the short term, is going to be a pretty good 1-2 punch for them this season.
When we take a look at this Colts offensive line, obviously they've put a lot of investment into it with three guys from last year's draft starting along that offensive line. They draft Zach Banner coming out of USC in the fourth round of this year's draft again. How do they feel about that offensive line, especially compared to where it was, say, 2 years ago?
They feel great about it, and it's been progress at a snail's pace. But it's been progress, and that's a good thing. And considering where the Colts were coming from with the offensive line 2 years ago, I don't know if that's necessarily saying much. But it was one of the few bright spots, really, of last season, the progression of the line. And they had a better second half than they did a first half. But I think things are finally starting to come together for that group. Anthony Costanzo is now one of the longest tenure Colts with all the turnover that they've had on the roster, one of the few holdovers left from the Bill Polian era. And then you've got Jack Muhart, who's going to be due a lucrative contract extension, who they really like. And they feel like they've solidified the interior of the offensive line as well. So they feel good about it. Look, it's not a unit that is going to be confused with one of the five best in the league. It's not the Dallas Cowboys or anything like that. But I do think that at the very least, this is not the Achilles heel of this team anymore, which it was for so long. And moving forward, that's absolutely a good thing, because it just feels like the offensive line has been a problem really dating back to the late Peyton Manning years, where this has just been a decade of issues where they've tried and tried and tried and they haven't been able to fix it. And then finally, in the last year or two, they put some pieces together that look like they're going to work.
Derek Schultz joining us from Fox Sports 97.5 in Indianapolis, at Schultz with a Z 975 on Twitter, if you want to give him a follow there. Switching gears to the defensive side of the ball, you look at this secondary. Obviously, the Colts have been struggling defensively for a long time now. Vontae Davis still part of the mix there in that backfield, but you're looking at having to put a bunch of young players. It's not that they didn't need the influx of talent on the defensive side of the ball, but especially in that secondary with the prospect of having to start their first and second round draft picks, Malik Hooker and Quincy Wilson at free safety and that other cornerback spot. It's a unit that's going to need some time to gel. How much are the Colts expecting some growing pains there in the defensive backfield early in 2017?
I think they're expecting a lot because kind of like with Andrew Luck's shoulder, there's a lot of uncertainty. Quincy Wilson, by default, is going to be the starter at day one because the Colts literally have nobody else. They've moved Darius Butler to safety, so they have nothing else at cornerback. So it really doesn't even, I don't think, matter how Wilson plays in training camp. He is going to be your starter in week one, and that's asking a lot of a rookie. They really like Malik Hooker. They were surprised that he fell to them because of his talent level, but he's overcoming offseason surgery, and he is going to miss the entire offseason program. So he didn't participate in rookie camp, didn't participate in OTAs or mini camp. He's not going to be playing in training camp. And I think asking somebody like that to just get thrown into the fire in August or September in the preseason or very early in the season is asking a whole lot, especially for a guy who's really only got a year and a half of college football experience, at least meaningful college football experience, under his belt. Vontae Davis can still play at a high level. The other days are probably behind him at this point, but he's still rock solid as long as he's healthy, so they like him at corner. Clayton Gathers has had some injury issues and other safeties that they like. I think really the safety position is where you have the big question mark, and just depth overall in that defensive secondary is a real problem. God forbid Hooker's not ready to be, or Wilson gets banged up, or Davis gets banged up, then that's going to be a serious issue for the Colts.
Looking at the front seven, Derek, obviously a big addition in Jonathan Hankins coming over from the New York Giants. I think the big question for the Colts is kind of the same as the big question for the Jags defensively is, where's the pass rush going to come from for the 2017 Colts?
Yeah, isn't that the million-dollar question? The best pass rush the last year was Eric Walden. And if you want to know anything about where other teams view Walden, he's actually still technically, I believe, unless something has changed in the last couple of weeks, he's still a free agent. So the guy that actually led the Colts, he's 31 years old in sacks last year, is still out there on the open market. I think that tells you all you need to know about where the Colts pass rush has been. Robert Mathis has gone into retirement. His days of being a feared pass rusher in the league were over really 2 years ago anyway. So the Colts are searching for that next guy, and I don't know if necessarily that guy is on the roster. You mentioned Hankins, do they feel good about in the teeth of that defense and the interior of the line? But their linebackers have done a complete overhaul. They spent some money on John Simon to come in from division rival Houston, who is, big player, probably is me being a little bit pessimistic there. But a guy that was sort of a rotation guy for them, they're expecting to come in and start. Also, Jabal Sheard, who they brought in from New England, he was their high priced free agent grab as well. So they're expecting him to come in and contribute. They took a flyer on Cleveland, he really kind of busted out there and played in New England as well and was mostly a special teams guy. So the linebacking core, I think, is something to really keep an eye on because the Colts essentially took a bunch of flyers on guys and are just hoping things work out, not only with those free agent signees, but also some of the guys that they brought in via the draft. Edwin Jackson, who's been with the team for a couple of years, guys like that, increasing their roles now that some of the old guard, Terrell Freeman, who left for the Bears a year ago, Mathis, Walden, are now out the door.
All right, Derek Schultz covering the Indianapolis Colts for Fox Sports 97.5 up there in Indianapolis, at Schultz with a Z, 975 on Twitter. We'll talk to you a little bit later on in the season, Derek.
All right, man. I'm sorry for the texture issues early. Hopefully it cleaned up by the end of it.
All right, it's cool, man. We appreciate it. And again, we'll talk to him a little bit later on. So we've covered all the AFC South teams today. We've taken a look with the Texans, with the Titans, and now with the Indianapolis Colts. The fan feedback spotlight question of the day asking you, if you could have one player to bring into this Jaguars roster from each of those teams, I know it's fantasy land. It's not like it's going to have any real impact on the 2017 outcome for the Jacksonville Jaguars, but if you could have one player from each of the other teams in the division to bring onto your roster here in Jacksonville, who would you select and why? I'll give you my picks here in just a moment. Tyler, we can even get Tyler's picks, and we'll obviously get to all of your answers as well on the fan feedback spotlight on social media. So on Twitter, at 1010XL Fat Tony, at 1010XL Tyler, as well as the Facebook page, Jaguars Today on Facebook. We'll get to your answers next as we wrap it up. I am one segment away from vacation time, brother, and I can feel it. We'll get to your answers next as we continue along on a Bob Roberts First Coast Roofing Friday here on Jaguars Today.
From the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field, more Jaguars today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, a Bob Roberts, First Coast Roofing Friday here on Jaguars Today. We're going to get into the fan feedback spotlight here in just a couple of moments. Get some of your answers to the question. If you could have one player off of each of the Jags division rivals, the Texans, Titans, and Colts, who would you select to join the Jags and why? We'll get some of those answers here in just a few moments. But first, Nate Peterson, whoever that is, working with CBS Sports, has put together a list of his 2017 preseason All-AFC South team. Now, there's four teams in a division. He's got 25 players making his All-AFC South team. So 25 players, there's four teams. So on average, each team should get six, six and a half, seven, somewhere in there, right? Like, that's right around the area you should be settling if you're just divvying it up evenly. And in a division like the AFC South, why wouldn't all four teams get six or seven guys and it be spread out in that kind of fashion? Now, the Jags get seven of the 25. All right, and a couple of them are going to surprise you. I would point you to the article, but I don't like pointing people towards slideshows because I know how much they annoy me. So I'm not going to ask you to go click through the slideshow over and over and over again like I just had to try to get this little bit of information as opposed to just having a list. Like, what's wrong with a list?
Got to get the clicks.
Yeah, it's what the people want, CBS Sports. No one wants slideshows, but nonetheless, no surprise that Andrew Luck is the quarterback. He's the first player listed. But you look outside of that, the Jags got seven players. Brandon Linder on the offensive line, no surprise there. Calais Campbell on the defensive line. A.J. Boye, Jalen Ramsey, both. I think Logan Ryan was the third corner they took there. So A.J. Boye, Jalen Ramsey, both make the All-AFC South preseason team, according to CBS Sports. Barry Church as the strong safety, which tells you a little bit about where that position is in the division. That's a guy that has been an okay player. He's a solid NFL player, but he's nothing special at that spot. Paul Posluszny, one of the linebackers selected for the team. No Telvin Smith, but Paul Posluszny. So they've had Linder, Campbell, Posluszny, Boye, Ramsey, and Church. They got one more. All right, the Jags got one more that make the All-AFC South team. And this is where, I mean, it's already a kind of meh list. It may get even more meh at this point. The wide receivers that Nate Peterson selects for the All-AFC South team. T.Y. Hilton, no issue there. DeAndre Hopkins, no issue there. The third best wide receiver in the AFC South. He chooses Rishard Matthews out of Tennessee. So Hilton, Hopkins, Matthews, the three that he goes with. Like I said, the Jaguars have one more guy that made the All-AFC South team, and it is a wide receiver that makes the All-AFC South team. He doesn't make it as a wide receiver. I don't know if he was trying to get cute, what he was trying to do. You may think that Allen Robinson would be the guy that deserves that spot as being maybe the number three receiver in the AFC South. That may be what you're thinking right now. I don't even think Nate Peterson agrees with you there, because even if he's trying to just be cute with putting Marquise Lee as the return man for the division, that's all he's doing, is trying to be cute with it, right? But T.Y. Hilton, Rishard Matthews, DeAndre Hopkins, the three wide receivers, nobody can convince me that Rishard Matthews is a better NFL wide receiver than Allen Robinson. It's just not going to happen. I get it. Allen Robinson didn't have the same year in 2016 that he had in 2015. I know Rishard Matthews had a really good year with the Tennessee Titans. Odds are pretty good that this season in Tennessee, Rishard Matthews likely going to be no better than the number two wide receiver and could be dropped all the way down to three with them adding Corey Davis and Eric Decker. We'll see how it all plays out when we actually get into it. But to select three wide receivers in this division and one of them not be Allen Robinson seems a little far-fetched to be. But have no fear, one wide receiver did make the list, Marquise Lee, as the return man for the AFC South. He didn't do a ton of that.
No, and I was going to say, they might even have a more lethal weapon in D.D. Westbrook to be a return man this year, right?
They could, And,
or even maybe Corey Grant could stay back there.
Right, in a division where they're adding a Dory Jackson to the return game, right? I mean, I get it. You haven't seen the guy play. Maybe you're just not going to put rookies on this list out of principle. I'm not going to put a rookie on this kind of list. But I think it tells you kind of where the return game is in the AFC South. You know, like Paul Posluszny being an all-AFC South linebacker, considering he's switching positions. Like, I don't even know if this guy is aware of it. I'm not sure if Nate Peterson's aware that Paul Posluszny isn't even a starter at the same spot, at least this year for the Jags. And look, it's hard for me to call a guy playing the strong side linebacker spot on a team that plays with a strong side linebacker about 35% of the time really a starter. You know, that's a role player to me in this defense. The same way Miles Jack was last year, Dan Scuda. That position just isn't used enough for me to call it a starter, but that's Nate Peterson's list. To each their own. Again, I won't even send out the link to it because if you want to find it, you can find it. I don't think the list is all that great, first off, and on top of that, it's a slideshow. So I'm not going to try to push people towards going to see that. The fan feedback spotlight of the day, asking you today, the fans, who would you take? If you could have one player off of each of the division rivals, Houston, Tennessee, Indianapolis, what one player would you select off of each of those rosters to join the Jacksonville Jaguars today, if you could? Tyler, what'd we get on Twitter?
From our friend Duval Doom said, what an awful question. I guess I'll go with Whitney Mercilus, Marcus Mariota. And the only special teams player I've seen all day on the Tom Bush Motors question of the day, he chose Adam Vinatieri. He wasn't a fan of what Jason Myers did last year, apparently.
Duval Doom is a hater. He can't make himself say J.J. Watt. Like anybody would select Whitney Mercilus over J.J. Watt. Come on, Doom. And then you take a kicker. This is just him not liking the question. It's a bunch of shade. And I feel like the shade is mostly being thrown my way. It's all right, Doom. I can take it.
Ocho Fisher says Whitney Mercilus for the speed rush. Jack Conklin solves the right tackle issue for the Jaguars for the next 10 years. And obviously, he'd go with Andrew Luck. No explanation needed there. Mitch says Clowney, Luck, and Conklin. JagFan15 says Luck. He is worth 8 wins alone. Watt, the best defensive lineman in the game. And Jalen Ramsey, the best cornerback. I don't know why he'd add him there. It's not a part of the question.
And
the last addition there in that same tweet, Taylor Lewan to keep the quarterback safe. One more here. Let's keep going down. Ryan Gilbert says Watt solves the edge issue. Mariota solves our quarterback thing. And Ryan Kelly, I saw a couple of suggestions for Ryan Kelly, because if they bring him here, he'd obviously play center, and that would allow Brandon Linder to move back to left or right guard.
Sure. I mean, I guess that would work out that way.
Another one, Mike Tishone, J.J. Watt, Andrew Luck, and Delanie Walker, the first time I've seen Delanie Walker's name come up.
He's too old.
No. If you're going to take any tight end, I wouldn't take one from the AFC South.
No. I think Delanie Walker may be the best tight end in the division, but he's got too much age on him for him to be the guy that you're going to go get in this kind of scenario. Plus, it's tight end. I mean, there's just so many other positions that have so much more value. Anything else?
Yeah, I actually saw a couple suggestions for Derrick Henry. I don't know why you would want to grab any running back off any of the other AFC South teams. I feel like the Jags may feel most comfortable with that position on their offense than maybe any other.
Oh, come on, man. You know why they put Derrick Henry.
Oh, of course I know why they put Derrick Henry.
The Yulee Bulldozer. The pride of Alabama. I mean, there's between Bama fans and people that are just pulling for Derrick Henry in general because of the area that we live in and obviously him coming out of Yulee. Yeah, I can see why they would. It's insane because you have Fournette, but I can see why they would.
Let me pose a hypothetical to you. So let's grab Derrick Henry and put him on the Jacksonville Jaguars. Hypothetically, where would he stack in the depth chart in the backfield?
Number two.
Would he be above Chris Ivory?
Yes. Chris Ivory. Man, I don't know what they do with Chris Ivory. The contract, really, they can get out of it after this season. It's kind of one of those deals we were talking about with like Pablo Sandoval earlier, where it's really a 2-year deal for Ivory, which is why he's going to be here in 2017. I have no doubts about that. They're not cutting Chris Ivory. Derrick Henry being here, although he is on a rookie deal, so I suppose they could keep all three of them, and it's not like you're spending that much more at the running back position with all three of them. But yeah, Ivory would be pushed down the depth chart for Derrick Henry. I have no doubt about that.
And that's all I got for the fan feedback. I'm trying to pull up my suggestions. I went with Andrew Luck. I feel like everybody went with Andrew Luck. It seemed pretty obvious
to
go.
Well, who the heck else do you want off the Colts?
Nobody. You don't want anybody.
I mean, maybe T.Y. Hilton.
Vinatieri.
Like, if you feel like Hilton really is a step up from what you got on your depth, maybe. I mean, that guy's been super productive, but I think part of the reason he's super productive is because Andrew Luck is his quarterback. I think that helps that equation a lot. There's nobody on defense you want, unless you wanted to go the Malik Hooker route and you really buy into the idea that he's going to turn into Ed Reed, but you're projecting an awful lot when you're doing that and you're passing up the opportunity to get one of the better young quarterbacks in the game. You'd have to really love, I guess, Marcus Mariota to go with anybody but Andrew Luck on the Colts.
And most people that chose the Titans went with one of the offensive linemen, one of the tackles, either Jack Conklin from Michigan State or Taylor Lewan from Michigan. I went with Lewan because left tackle is probably one of the most important positions on a whole team. So I went with Andrew Luck to the Colts, Taylor Lewan for the Titans, and for the Texans, I did not choose J.J. Watt. I'm not a huge fan of him either. I did go with Whitney Mercilus. Very accomplished, productive, seems to always destroy Blake Bortles whenever they play each other. So I went with Luck, Lewan, and Mercilus.
Okay. I went a little bit of a different direction. Again, to me, you look at the division, you're going to ask a question like this. The first thing you're going to do is identify the quarterback position and which one do you want to go get because the Jags are struggling so much with it. So do you want Mariota or do you want Luck? And I just look at the rest of my options with the Colts. If I'm taking one guy, I don't like them. I don't like the options very much. So I went with Andrew Luck. Although I do really love Marcus Mariota, but I went with Luck. I went with Conklin coming out of Tennessee because I do think they need the help on that offensive line. And I think Cam Robinson actually could be a pretty good left tackle. So I'm not going to give up on Cam Robinson being my left tackle. So I'll go with the right tackle spot in Jack Conklin. And I think all you people are nuts on this J.J. Watt thing. I think you're all crazy if you're going to say that you wouldn't take that guy as the one guy you could get off that Texans roster. Look, I get back-to-back years with the injuries. I have some questions about how...
And it's the back. You don't really recover well from back injuries.
I get it. I get why you have questions about it, but nobody in Houston is expressing any concern over what's going on with J.J. Watt and his back at this point.
It's because they're scared.
And I honestly think, look, J.J., as I've said since his stars started to shine in the National Football League, J.J. Watt is a guy that is easy to hate when he's playing for anybody but you and easy to have as your favorite player of all time if he's on your team. He's that type of guy, that type of personality. If J.J. Watt was a Jacksonville Jaguar, he would be one of the five most beloved Jags of all time already at this point in his career. We're talking about a guy that is an MVP candidate year to year playing defensive line. Not just a defensive player of the year candidate. He's been an MVP candidate when he's been healthy and playing on the field. Like, to take anybody over J.J. Watt off that Texans roster, I think you got to be a little bit crazy. That's just your J.J. Watt hate showing, honestly, is what I think that is. I think you can't admit how great J.J. has been. But we'll see if the back issues come into play. If you want to get scared off by him, I wouldn't be scared off if I had this completely fake and made up opportunity to go grab somebody off of one of these other rosters. We doing crosstalk today, Tyler?
Yeah, we're trying to connect with these guys up in Charlotte, I should say, here in a few minutes.
Okay, so we're efforting talking to the boys up there in Charlotte. As anytime you put Joe C in charge as an engineer, there may be some technical issues from time to time. We talking to Joe or Rick today? Joe. All right, Joe C finally got it hooked up and connected. We're live with him up in Charlotte. I know sometimes, maybe a long Thursday night, Joe, heading into a short Friday morning. How are we up there?
You read me like a book, Tony Smith. You know, I'm master, you know, like jack of all trades, master of none. But everything is hooked up, ready to go, and we should have a good day. We're going to hear from Jimbo Fisher, both of the FSU stars, Derwin James and DeAndre Francois, two guys that you may only see for one season in FSU uniforms. Hard to say, but I think Seminole fans will be surprised at what Derwin James has to say about that. And then Mark Rick, Shaq Quarterman, who played at Oak Leaf, who is a big-time star for those guys down in South Florida. So, yeah, we got a lot working today, Tony.
Yeah, it sounds like it. And yesterday felt like the Clemson day. Today is kind of the Florida State day. So the two dominant programs, at least right now in the conference, and obviously waiting on Miami to step it back up, right? I mean, yeah. And Mark Rick getting down there, it feels like they could be turning a corner soon. Maybe 2017's the year, right, Joe?
Well, it's just incredible how quickly he's turned around the recruiting for Miami. Way back in the day, they used to get all the big stars, and we know who they are and know them well. And then, you know, that dry period where they just couldn't follow up, say, post Butch Davis through Larry Coker and, of course, into Randy Shannon and Al Golden. And Randy did an okay job recruiting, but they just didn't turn out the stars. Mark Richt right now is on pace to have the number one recruiting class in America, which is huge when you consider what he's been able to do. He's got to find a quarterback. That's the number one thing for the Hurricanes this year. But I like them right now in the Coastal Division. I couldn't remember which one. Coastal Division.
I couldn't tell you who's in what division, Joe. That's honest truth.
But I do. I think, obviously, that quarterback is going to be the most important thing. But Rick has had a knack for finding a guy and keeping him for 4 years, so I wouldn't be surprised if a freshman shows up day one and is their starter.
Quickly, Joe, before we let you go, today we're asking fans, we took a look around the AFC South, if you could have one player off of each of the other three division rivals from the Jags, so one Texan, one Titan, one Colt, who would you take off those teams?
Wow, that is a good one. I'm just going to just immediately say J.J. Watt, Marcus Mariota, who I didn't know whether or not he would be legit as an NFL quarterback, and I do think he is. I think he's smart, doesn't make mistakes, so I would take those two. And that's taking Mariota over Luck right now,
yep,
just because of the long-term upside. Who would I take off of the Indianapolis Colts? First, I would think T.Y. Hilton, but then, you know, the receiving corps is not bad right now. Have to think of a couple of other guys that you could take.
If you're looking future, maybe a guy like Malik Hooker. I mean, if he really is going to turn into Ed Reed.
Yeah, that's a good one. We haven't seen him. We don't know exactly how healthy he's going to be to start this year. But, yeah, okay, I'll go with that one, Tony. That's a pretty good one for sure.
All right, Joe. We'll be tuning in. ACC coverage coming up here in about 10 minutes. See you, bud.
All right, man.
All right, there he is, Joe Cowart. Rick Ballew, they'll be live from Charlotte covering the ACC Media Days. You heard them. We'll hear from a couple of those Florida State Seminoles that are up there and hopefully from Jimbo Fisher as well, as they've already had the opportunity to catch up with the Clemson contingent yesterday up there in Charlotte. So that's coming up next. For me, I'll talk to you in about a week and a half. A week from Monday, I'll be back. Looking forward to the vacation. So we'll be, by the time I get back, we will be 3 days away from Jaguars training camp. It'll be that Thursday of the week that I'm back that we'll have Jaguars training camp getting started. Mike and I will be live from all the training camp practices that are open to the public. So if you're heading out that week, come by, say hello. So for Mike Dempsey on vacation, he'll be back in on Monday with John Osher right here from the 1010XL headquarters. For Tyler Devitt, for our guest today, John Harris covering the Texans, Jim Wyatt covering the Titans, Derek Schultz covering the Colts. I'm Fat Tony. Enjoy your weekend, everybody. I'll see you when I get back from vacation.
Lunchtime's coming. If you pack an appetite, maybe you'd like to try the July Sandwich of the Month from Dandy Sandwiches and Subs. I'm talking about the three-meat trio, and it's available at area Circle K and Kangaroo Express locations. It starts off with some Hormel Top Round roast beef, Butterball smoked turkey. Add in the Black Forest ham and pile it high with creamy Swiss cheese on an Asiago cheese sub roll, and you've got a delicious concoction that you can get for only $3.99, but that price only good for the month of July. Dandy rolling out a bunch of new menu items this year, but they're still going old school with the ham and cheese twist, the throwback Black Forest ham piled high with cheddar cheese, a little mayo and pickle blend on a fresh hand-braided brioche sub roll. One of the many varieties from Dandy for you to sample, for you to try. Something for everybody, whether it's breakfast, brunch, lunch, on the go, on the weekend, headed to the beach, load up the cooler with Dandy sandwiches and make everybody in your traveling party happy. No matter what the occasion, if you're hungry for food on the go, do what I do, folks. Go out and make yours a Dandy and do it today.
You guys have a good day. Peace.